Welcome to the world today. My name is Frank Weltner. I am the librarian for JewWatch, the largest compendium of information about Jewish organizations and news on the internet today. In addition, I am the librarian and archivist for a new website, www.americanussr.com, which is already the largest compendium of history concerning the negative aspects of the United States of America, which the CIA, FBI, the presidency, the Congress, and all other agencies of the United States want you to know nothing about. Well, we have a story today that says that 24 people have been killed in 3 suspected U.S. drone missile strikes in Pakistan's northwestern Khyber region, which is, of course, along the famous Khyber Pass. Pakistani intelligence and government officials said the barrage of missiles struck 2 villages in Khyber's Tira Valley along the Pakistan-Afghan border. We have initial reports of some 24 suspected militants killed in these 3 attacks today, one intelligence official in the region said. Well, now that's interesting. One intelligence official in the region said, is that an American intelligence official? Is it a Taliban official? Is it a Al-Qaeda official? Is it a CIA person? Is it a Pakistani, an Afghani? It doesn't say. It says one intelligence official in the region said that they have initial reports of some 24 suspected militants killed in 3 attacks. Well, let's go on. It could not be immediately verified from independent sources if the dead were anti-government fighters, who often dismiss the death tolls in such attacks. The missiles fired from drones hit houses in the villages of Spleendang and Shandana, located in the same valley where another suspected U.S. drone attack left at least 7 people dead a day earlier. Now, can you imagine the recklessness of a government? Having Air Force people sitting in an air-conditioned soft chair in an air-conditioned room in Kansas or Indiana or someplace like that, killing people in the Khyber Pass, hitting 2 buildings, and then claiming that miraculously most of the suspected dead, were 24 of them, were militants. How in the world would they know? Did they interview them? Did they put them on trial? Did anybody declare that they were militants? I'll tell you what. This is just too much. I mean, it's like dark humor. The whole American concept of war is a complete environment of the darkest humor possible. Most of the estimated 100 missile attacks this year inside Pakistan have taken place in North Waziristan, a tribal area effectively under the control of Taliban and Al-Qaeda groups, or so they say. Pakistani officials protest the strikes, but they are believed to have secretly authorized at least some of them. It's interesting, they protest the strikes, but they are believed. Says who? They are believed to have secretly authorized at least some of them. Don't you see how this is a total apology for what's going on over there? They protest the strikes, but they're believed to have secretly authorized at least some of them. Well, which ones did they authorize? Did they authorize this one? I mean, what's the deal here? This is crazy. Analysts also say targeting information for many of the attacks is likely to be provided by Pakistani intelligence officials. Well, the analysts say that the targeting information is likely to be provided by Pakistani intelligence officials. In other words, didn't say that it was. Well, it's likely to be. But come on, this is so loose, it's incredible. You could run an elephant through the hole in the wall on this one. The missile attacks have been credited with killing many top-ranking fighters. Well, how would they know? They're sitting in Kansas, miles away, shooting at buildings. They don't know who's inside them. The attacks have also stirred nationalist anger in Pakistan due to high numbers of civilian deaths. So now finally, you see the truth kind of rumbles out of the elephant hole in the building where all these dead people are. But that strikes have also stirred nationalist anger in Pakistan. I get this. Due to high numbers of civilian deaths. So the story starts off with 24 suspected militants were killed. Two houses were destroyed. And now it says that there's tremendous anger in Pakistan due to high numbers of civilian deaths by these strikes. So the story is just one big public relations lie after another. The frequency of the attacks has more than doubled this year compared to 2009, suggesting the U.S. administration sees the tactic as a key to reducing the strength of fighters planning attacks in Afghanistan. The U.S. does not, as a rule, confirm drone attacks, but its military and the Central Intelligence Agency, that wonderful, wonderful place at Langley Field, the Central Intelligence Agency operating in Pakistan, are the only forces that deploy the aircraft in the region. So there you have it. The U.S. military and the Central Intelligence Agency are the only forces that deploy the aircraft in the region. In other words, it's not even the Air Force. It's not the Army, it's not the Air Force completely. A lot of it's the CIA just doing what it wants. And then saying, well, we have reports on the ground that these were all enemy soldiers. Now, you know, if you believe that, then I will sell you a bridge in New York that I don't even own. I mean, if you would believe the CIA, then you would believe that Allende, the duly elected president of Chile, who was murdered in a coup engineered by the CIA 20 years ago, that he shot himself in the head on the steps of the Chilean parliament, that he just couldn't stand to live after the United States attacked his government, so he shot himself in the head. Couldn't have been the CIA shooting him. It couldn't be that vicious dictator that we installed there by the name of Pinochet, who killed tens of thousands of Chileans, rounded them up, tortured them. Couldn't be that. No, it had to be the wonderful, beautiful United States of America. And it had to be a police action that was done to help these people who needed the guidance of policemen to make sure that nothing violent happened in their country. Oh, except that Pinochet was the most violent military dictator in South America, and we installed him and supported him. And and likewise, here in Pakistan, we're supposed to believe that the same wonderful military operation and CIA operation are on the up and up, and that we're only killing militants. We're not killing civilians. And you're supposed to also think that Pinochet was a terrible person, even though he was the duly elected president of a democracy, murdered by your country, your shameful country, run by the freak show in Washington, D.C., where you have the Pentagon, which is a five-sided building that looks a lot like the satanic five-sided cube. I don't know what you call it, five-sided pentagon. It's a pentagonal shape, which is the shape of the devil. I don't want to really go there, but that's what it is. And just right next to it is Washington, D.C., with all of these other nice little satanic things like obelisks and so forth, and stars of David and stars of Lucifer all over the streets, the way they're laid out. Well, what can I tell you? You don't have any way of getting the real news unless you listen to The World Today with Frank Weltner. Then you might be able to see through the sharp razor edges of the vicious news that's given to you by the minority-owned newspapers of America, like the New York Times, the Washington Post, oh, and Fox News, earned by Murdoch, who's a member of the minority group that's made a coup out of capturing all of these news properties and then telling you exactly what he wants you to know so that everything America does will look good. Because America, as we all know, or we should know, except that we'll never know from reading this minority press, America is whatever the bankers of New York want it to be. And like I always tell you, if you want to know why your congressman can't see you when you go to his office and knock in Washington, D.C. and say, I'd like to meet with my congressman or my senator, the reason they can't meet with you is that they're in New York licking the faces of the bankers. Now, I know that there are people out there criticizing me for having a low estimation of the value of American government and of American military operations. They say that this Frank Welter is some kind of a subversive, that he doesn't tell things the way that we in Washington want them to be told. And they've come after Frank Welter. They've come after me in a big time in the recent past, threatening to cuff me and take me into a cell and leave me there for 99 years. And they've done that with many dissidents in this country. This country will tell you over and over again through their lying teeth that this is a country that allows for journalism to operate freely, that allows reporters to come and go and to say what they want even if the government doesn't like it. But I can tell you from what's been done to me by these thugs that that's not the way it is. That this country has incarcerated more reporters than any other country that I can remember in recent times. And we also have right now 3 million people in prisons, more than any other nation in the world, which is 3 times the 1 million people in all of China, where there are basically 13 to 14, I was going to say a million, it's not that, it's 1.4, 1.3 to 1.4 million people. Billion people, I'm sorry. This is a really bad day for me. 1.3 to 1.4 billion people versus our 300 million. And we have 3 million in prison and they only have 1 million. Now, what does it tell you about this freedom-loving America that allows people to walk around freely and to do what they want? Most of the people, you know, who are in prison in America are there for smoking marijuana. And I'll bet more than half of you have smoked marijuana, probably 70 or 80% of you have. I know I did when I was in college. I smoked marijuana every day for 15 years. And then one day I thought, I don't need this stuff anymore, and I quit smoking it. I don't have a drug around me because I know that the federal government would be all over my rear end if I did. Because they're on to me. They're all over me. Because these are vicious, freedom-hating people up there in the freak show in Washington, D.C. They have a reputation for looking at reporters and newspapers and websites and trying to build cases against people whenever they can. The idea is to terrorize the American populace, to keep it under control, to make sure that the people don't rise up and say, hey, we're really tired of these wars. Hey, we're really tired of you kissing up to these bankers and licking their faces all day long while they rob the American people of their work by printing free phony paper money and increasing the inflation so that the money is worthless by the end of the year, so that it loses 3 to 4 to 5% every year. And that, plus the 5% we're paying for our houses every year, plus the 15% we pay the federal government, and the 7 or 8% that we pay for FICA, for Social Security taxes, we don't have anything left. We can barely survive here. We've been made into a taxed and usuried group of peasants who have a house, but only barely. And if we lose our job within a few months, we'll lose our house because we're just paying that house off month by month. And if we lose our salary, suddenly we lose our house. We'll all be out in the street. And if the bankers had their way, that's where we all would be right now. Because they've received trillions of dollars of our money, backed by our government, that says that you and I are going to pay that money back, even though it was given to the banks who lost that money by gambling it away on different guesses as to what the economy would do. But nonetheless, even though they took the losses, we're supposed to cover it, and we are covering it. But I don't think we're going to pay that off. I don't think you're going to pay it off, and I don't think I'm going to pay it off either. I'm determined not to pay it off. We told our congressmen not to waste that money, and they went out and wasted it anyway. And then they came back to us and said, why? We're your representatives. We represent you here at the Freak Show in Washington, D.C. And we represent you, which is impossible since they represent 640,000 constituents, which would mean if they shook everybody's hand, 2,000 of us, in the 365 days in a year, it would take them 2 years to shake each one of our hands. Now, if a congressman could shake 2,000 hands a day, I'm sure his hand would fall off within a month. I mean, his hand would just be, it would be wrecked. There'd be nothing left, because every once in a while somebody with a big handshake is going to get a hold of his hand and squeeze it to death. And then there'll be little grandmothers with their frail hands who are going to have their hands broken by the congressman shaking their hand, because the congressman will forget that, oh, it's an old lady, I better not shake her hand too hard. I might break those fragile bones. At any rate, this fiction, this stupid fiction that we live in a democracy and that we are represented by Congress, it doesn't make any sense. When was the last time you had breakfast with your congressman at the local restaurant? I would think that for 99.99% of you, the answer is never. And never shall you. Because the banker, the banker, the representative and the senator are up in New York licking the faces of the bankers this very moment. And when you go to Washington, you won't even find them there. They're out getting money from the rich, the powerful, and the elites. And you're just the sucker. That's what you are, baby. You are the sucker, I'm the sucker. We're the little kid out there in the hustings where the congressman comes only every 2 years to try to get just enough votes to squeak through so that he can continue to go to the Senate bar and the House bar and to hobnob with the rich and the famous, and to take junkets all over the world at your expense, and to stay at nice hotels paid for by corporations who are trying to get special deals from the United States government, or maybe build a useless dam in your state, which will do nothing but dam up the water of a beautiful wild river, and which will eventually fill up with mud so that it will look like a piece of junk in no time. And that's what these congressmen do. That's what they do. They deal with contracts. They deal with banks. They deal with companies. They deal with media people. They try to preen themselves as someone who's helping your city and the city next to your city, your state, the state next to your state. These are the good guys. These are the guys who are going to bat for you. These are the guys who know what you want because they're psychic. Because they certainly never meet you. They're too busy licking the faces of the banks. So they could never meet you. There's too many of you. They're spread so thin, 640,000 constituents for each member of Congress. And like I say, if they could shake 1,000 hands a day in 365 days, they would only have shaken the hands of 365,000 people. They'd have to do 2,000 a day in order to shake everybody's hand once a year. Well, isn't that something? That's really something. And, of course, they've never shaken your hand, so what do they know that you want them to do? They know nothing that you want them to do. Zero, zilch. They don't know you. They don't care about you. They care about the banker who's going to pay for their for their donations so that they can have a campaign the next year. They care about the media that's going to give them good credits every day, so that when you read the newspaper, you'll think, oh, Representative so-and-so is such a wonderful person. Look how hard he is at work. And he's simply holding a news conference for a few minutes in which he makes a few statements, and then the reporter prints the statements just as the congressman put them out. It's all one big, crappy scam that's designed to make you think that you're being represented, to make you think that you live in a democracy, but in reality, you live in a dictatorship, a country that's constantly at war, a country that's so fascist that it's a binding of government, banks, corporations, media, all together at the top in a big fist. And that's what fascist comes from, the word fist. It's a huge fist full of companies and media and banks and government officials and the military and war. That's what your government is. I'm trying to be just as gentle as I can in everything that I say about America, because there was a time when I really loved America. That was a time when I was told and I believed that America was a place that stood for freedom, a place in which people really mattered. Well, look what happened just the other day. Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist and columnist Chris Hedges and Pentagon Papers whistleblower Daniel Ellsberg were among 131 anti-war activists who were arrested during a nonviolent demonstration. And where was that demonstration? It was outside the White House. And why were they there? They were there to protest against the war in Afghanistan, as well as America's ongoing conflicts in Iraq and Pakistan. Hedges, the reporter, delivered a rousing speech about the nature of hope, in contrast to what certain campaign slogans might have suggested in recent years, pointing out that hope has a cost. Hope is not comfortable, before joining other supporters of Veterans for Peace, who chained themselves to the White House fence. Now, does that sound like they love what your country's doing? These are Veterans for Peace. Veterans chaining themselves to the White House fence. When asked why he chose that course of action, Hedges replied, "Because it's all we have at this point. The normal mechanisms by which democratic participation are rendered possible in this country have been closed shut. And if we don't do this, we die. This is what's left of hope in this country." Ellsberg said he was drawn to the demonstration in part because veterans were leading the action. "I know that people were here to understand that this war is hopeless and wrong, as the war we participated in Vietnam. And it's not going to end by a presidential initiative," he said. "It'll only be because the American public has awakened to the responsibilities and to the realities of this war. The big lie that the American government is telling its people now," Ellsberg believes, "is that these wars are protecting us at home." Yes, my friends, that is the big lie. It's the lie that these wars are protecting us at home. When, as a matter of fact, the only terrorists who have been arrested in America are mostly students and black people who are minding their own business. When the FBI and the CIA got a hold of them, mostly the FBI and Homeland Security, started working on them, trying to get them to agree to attack the United States. The FBI and the Homeland Security officials provided people pretending to be Al-Qaeda officials, people who were Arabs, who were Muslims, and they racistly took these people, which is a form of racial tinkering, and they found these similar Islamic students and said, "You're an Islamic student. I'm sure that you've seen that the United States and Israel are screwing around with your people over in the Middle East. Would you like to meet an Al-Qaeda representative?" Well, the student's kind of, 19 years old. They don't think that far ahead. Well, sure, I'll meet with him. So then they have a meet with the Al-Qaeda person who befriends them, tells them about Allah and jihad and what a wonderful life it is and how exciting. And then they take them over to Pakistan where they train with Al-Qaeda. And then they give them bombing materials that won't blow up, detonators that won't blow up, and a cell phone. And when they hook all this together, and they have a demonstration showing that the bombs actually work, so that when they take it to court, the people in the court will be told that, this was not something that the student knew that it was going to blow up, because he blew up some of these, because he was driven halfway across the state, and they blew these things up for him to show him that they were real. So he wanted to kill these Americans. So after giving them these fake materials, these fake detonators, then when he calls the number on the telephone they gave him to ignite the bomb, which is not really a bomb but a fake, then they come and arrest him and ruin his life forever. The United States of America, the bravery of these federal officials doing this to these students. If anybody should go to jail, it's these officials who do things like this. This is total wickedness. This is not something that helps the United States. Because these kids would never have been able to figure out how to put these bombs together, how to detonate them, etc. These people were set up and they were stalked and told what to do and manipulated over and over again. Because the FBI needs to do some stings so it looks like they're doing something. Because if they hadn't arrested these people, they wouldn't have had anybody that they would have arrested, because there were no real terrorists in America for them to arrest. This is all BS. This is a fake war on terror. There is no war on terror. What there is a typical lying mouth of the freaks in the Pentagon, at Langley, with the CIA, at the Hoover Building. The freaks in Congress, the freaks in the Senate, the freaks in the presidential administration, telling people in the paper that we're fighting the war on terror, when in fact all they're doing is transferring money to bankers and putting down on their notes that, well, we bought some flights to Pakistan to stop the Al-Qaeda. We paid money over here for weapons for some of our operatives with Al-Qaeda. We paid Blackwater billions of dollars to help us with Al-Qaeda, and they paid all their other friends other sums of money that you're supposed to pay for in order to defeat Al-Qaeda, which is really Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda was started by the CIA. The Taliban was started by the CIA. Saddam Hussein was funded and started by the CIA. All these people were funded by the CIA. This is ridiculous. This country has kept us all on tenterhooks for decades by funding both sides of conflicts and then stepping out on one side or the other as they stick a knife into the back of one or other of their friends and say, "This person's a terrorist and we don't like him. So now we're going to have to invade his country, arrest him, run him through a fake trial, and then hang him from the halyards." Well, that's my country. That's my baby, America. America, the vicious, gun-slinging, bomb-slinging pariah of the world. We are what we hated about the Soviet Union, what we were told about the Soviet Union in the 1940s and 50s, what a hateful country it was, how the government was constantly arresting reporters, etc. And now they're doing it here. Look at this Wikipedia thing. Not Wikipedia, but WikiLeaks. Look at it. They arrested this man simply because he didn't use a condom. You know, I couldn't make this stuff up. This stuff is so silly that I couldn't make it up. But you've read it in the paper, you've heard it on the radio, you've seen it on the news, that this man, Assange, or Assange, whichever way you want to call his name, however you want to pronounce it, that he's been arrested because he didn't use a condom. Now, if they arrested every man who didn't use a condom, then half of the country, no, 90% of the men in this country would be out behind bars right now, and I'd be spending the next 1,500 years behind bars for the many times I had sex without a condom. I mean, what are we talking about here? We're talking about what people normally and naturally do. And this man's been arrested for it. Why? Because it's convenient. Because he printed something that they didn't want to have printed. Because he embarrassed the great Satan, the United States of America, by printing what they have said in private, which is that they have no respect for even their friends, that they treat them with abandon, that they use them until they're used up and then they discard them, that they toss away billions in the pursuit of deceits and lies to further their empire. And they don't want people to know that. So that's why they went after him. That's why suddenly not using a condom is considered something really dread. That this person is a pariah. He's the condom pariah. This is a man that had sex without a condom in Sweden. Whereas we all know from watching TV that the women have sex all the time, and so do the men. Or you remember 20 years ago they used to show these Swedish girls that would honk a horn when a man came by, and men that would honk a horn when the women came by, and they'd jump in the car and go to an apartment and have sex. I mean, they were a nation of sex fiends, according to the media. And now this man has been arrested for having sex without a condom. America, you are a hopeless buzzard. Now this is bad enough. I suppose we could have ended it there with the dastardliness of going against Assange because they don't like him telling the truth, basically. He's got the evidence on how dastardly the United States is, and they don't want him to tell the truth. They want to keep it hidden. They want to keep it under a dark rock so that they won't be ridiculed by the bright sunlight of public exposure and international exposure. We're not talking about a little kid here. We're talking about a huge nation that has a huge army, a huge air force, a huge set of missiles, and a huge archive of atomic weapons. And it's a nation that's reckless, that acts recklessly behind closed doors and plans world wars and sends them in cables where somebody might be able to get a hold of them. Total recklessness on the part of the United States government, the freak show in Washington, which is so arrogant that it believes it can get by with this forever and ever and ever. But, you know, all good things come to an end, and Mr. Assange has gotten the goods on the United States of America, and now they want Sweden to arrest him and put him in jail for not using a condom. But there's more. There's more. Just yesterday, some very brave people fought to save a life. And now they're having to fight to not have to pay a $90 fine for saving a life. Whose life did they save? They saved the life of a deer that was trapped in icy water on Thursday night. And the good deed was rewarded with tickets. Yeah, this crazy government, where they pulled this deer out, gave them a ticket. These strangers who banded together to pull a deer out of the freezing water of the Patapsco River. "We saw the deer going under," said Khalil Abusakran, it couldn't maintain. It was starting to freeze, and it was really getting bad. So Abu Sakran brought a raft, and Jim Hart joined him. And he said, "We had our oars and shovels. We had our oars and shovels to break the ice and the deer to get out." This man is an immigrant, so he doesn't speak, perfect English, but he's trying. In the excited aftermath of the rescue, a natural resources police officer on the scene wrote both men a ticket. And he didn't say anything, Jim Hart said. We went in and out of the waters numerous times. He didn't stop us at all. They said they were ticketed for not wearing life vests. And it turns out that both are over the age for mandatory use of flotation devices. This is almost like a condom. We didn't take our condoms with us when we rescued the deer. No, we didn't have vests on, but we're not 16 years old, Abu Sakran said. There were personal floating devices in the boat. The ticket itself doesn't check off any specific violation, just a $90 fine. This is a true story, folks. They'll fight it in a court as they fought for the deer. But the two men ticketed say they will fight citations at the court hearing in Annapolis, set for February the 18th. So there you have it. These terrorists in Annapolis went into the water without a vest to rescue a deer. This type of terrorism can't be tolerated in America. We have to have some controls here. We have to have some insight. We have to have some direction for these people. These people can't do things like this. Go into water without a vest, even though they have vests in their boat, to rescue a deer. Risk their lives in ice-cold water, and everybody in Annapolis is applauding them, and suddenly this idiot writes them a ticket for $90 for going into the water without a flotation device. Even though he didn't tell them to wear the flotation device. He's standing there as they go into the water. He doesn't tell them to use a flotation device. And when they're done, he writes them a $90 ticket. Isn't America beautiful? This is a beautiful thing. It's all good. That's what my grandmother say. It's all good. If you find out that the cow died, don't worry about it. It's all good. The deer lived, but the men who were brave enough to rescue the deer got a $90 fine. But remember, it's all good. There was this crazy little op-ed story in Haaretz, the major newspaper in Israel, and it's in Hendon, in the United Kingdom, a little town there close to London, between London and Manchester. And three political candidates, it seems, were sitting up in the stage on the stage this week. One of them wearing a skull cap, although he was not Jewish. The second waxing poetic about his trip to Israel, and the third furious about anti-Semitism in Europe, and twice mentioning his personal role in getting Holocaust Remembrance Day put on the national calendar. Now, these fake Jews who live in Jerusalem and who pretend to be Jews, but they're really not, they work for Haaretz and they work for these other newspapers. I'm not just picking on Haaretz, but the fact is that most Jews in the world are fake Jews. They come from Khazaria, and they're basically Mongols who converted and don't have a drop of Jewish blood. And neither does anybody in Israel, unless they were some of the 25,000 who were living there when the European Jews came down there from wherever they'd immigrated from, Khazaria and from Mongolia. Well, the story goes on. It says the venue, the Hendon United Synagogue, one of dozens of synagogues in the borough of Barnet, home to Britain's largest Jewish community. It says, according to the last census, which was done in 2001, no more than 0.5% of the general population call themselves Jewish. In other words, 0.5%. But they are considered a strong voting bloc because they are mainly clustered in a few tiny constituencies around London and Manchester. According to the 2001 census, a full 17.6% of the Jewish UK population, or 46,000 Jews, live in Barnet. Hendon, one of the three constituencies that make up Barnet, is considered an important marginal seat in the coming elections, held by Labour but coveted by the Tories. Now, Labour is a party there that's really run pretty much by the Jewish communities. Do you support the terrorist organization in Hamas? An elderly gentleman asked all three of them, getting the debate going. The candidates practically fell over each other in their rush to answer the negative. In the negative. Look at what they've done to their own people, begins Matthew Offord, the Tory contender. Despicable, charges Matthew Harris of the Liberal Democrats. I am in despair at what I see that they are doing in Gaza, pipes Andrew Dismore, the current Hendon MP, a Labour man who has represented this constituency since 1997. According to the newspaper, the questions came in fast and furious. What about funding for Jewish schools? How do the candidates feel about the Eruv, wired demarcation for Orthodox Jews to carry objects on Shabbat? On Hendon, in Hendon, what do they think about the university movements to boycott Israel? Universal jurisdiction? They seemed generally uninterested in matters of community hospitals, transport, or the like. It's all Israel and Jews all the time, and the candidates have no choice but to oblige. So here even Haaretz, you know, is talking about the Jews. Well, we should call them the fake Jews, I guess, in Barnet, since they certainly aren't related to Abraham in any way whatsoever. But let's go on. On a national level, it's harder to get straight answers in a country where popular opinion is increasingly critical of Israel, and there is nothing quite like the Jewish lobby in the United States for pro-Israel advocacy. Jewish and Israeli-related questions are approached delicately by the leaders and the top candidates. As Ed Fordham, a Lib Democrat and candidate running in Hampshire and Kilburn, another heavily Jewish constituency not far from Hendon, puts it, everyone says don't touch the subject. There's a nervousness, but, he continues, sometimes it is important and necessary to be counted and to have this conversation. In other words, if you want to win, baby, you'd better pander to this little group. Although things have changed over time, Jews in Britain have traditionally favored the Labour Party. And Prime Minister and Labour leader Gordon Brown has, during the time in office, worked to strengthen this connection. He has weighed in on issues ranging from anti-Semitism and Islamic radicalism on campus to government funding of security for Jewish institutions. Well, in other words, he's been kissing a lot of Semitic booty here. Anyway, this story goes on and rambles, and it shows all of the ways that people are kissing up to these folks. And it just shows what you're getting into when you get yourself into a multiracial country. It's nothing but chaos. I mean, here you have these Jewish people who are only interested in Israel, and they're only interested in the Holocaust, which has really nothing to do with England. And that's what they're voting on. And, of course, you have the Islamics. All they're interested in is Allah and in freedom for the Islamics. And in the England and the United States getting their troops out of those areas down there. And you have these other groups like the Africans who are in, they've wormed their way into England, And they're for getting things done for Nigeria and other African communities and opening up immigration so that they can have more and more of the country and take it away from the native population. And there are the Indians from India and the Pakistanis from Pakistan, whom the Brits always call Pakis and Indies. But at any rate, they want more and more. And then you have the poor little bewildered Englishmen who are so stupid that they've allowed all these people into their country because the bankers that their leaders look up to, they're always licking their faces of these banks. They allowed all these people to come in because they work cheap. And that's what the banks want, because the banks own all these companies and these department stores, and they want to have all of these foreigners to work for them. I mean, when was the last time you went in your bank? Did you see a bunch of people that look like you there, or did you see new people? You know, like Indians with a red dot on their forehead, wearing some kind of a sari or something, and Japanese women and women from different minorities and men from different minorities. I mean, it looked like a freak show, didn't it? It looked like an international airport the last time I went to my bank. And I was like, do I live in America, or do I do I live in the middle of the Sahara Desert, and all of these nomads are coming across the sand, but I don't see where their camels are at? Did they park them out and back? What's happening here? What happened to my country? Did my people decide we wanted to restrict America to people unlike me? And unlock my black friends who are here in this country, who have been here for hundreds of years? Did we decide to give our country away to strangers who would replace us and leave us with no heritage whatsoever, so that our entire seed line would be washed away in the next 50 to 100 years? And so that when we die, our culture will die with us, and the country will become something totally different? Did we decide to do this? Or was it the banks that decided to, while the congressmen were licking their faces, playing licky face with the banks? And I think that's what happened, was these banking people decided, and these are the Bolsheviks, these are the Judeo-Bolsheviks that started the Soviet Union, that paid Karl Marx, the Rothschilds who paid Karl Marx to write Das Kapital, and they created socialism and communism and anarchism. Anarchism was invented by Anna Goldman, who was an activist in New York, and her museum is in the Judeo-Bolshevik University of California at Berkeley, which is the most radical university probably in the entire world now. Even more radical than the University of Istanbul in Istanbul. More radical than the University in Mecca. At any rate, our culture is being destroyed by these bankers who we've allowed to take over our Congress, our Senate, our presidency, our businesses, our universities, our hospitals. You know, I defy you to find very many people that look like you in medicine. When you go to a medical school, you see Chinese, you see Japanese, you see Indians and Pakistanis, you see Mexicans, you see all sorts of people. You see lots of Jewish people. Those are the whites there. The other whites aren't there, really. They're kept out. And when you look at the people that run the university medical centers and the university medical schools, you find that they're usually run by a Jewish person. But more and more, they're run by some other type of foreigner, like an Indian or a Pakistani. Just so long as a white person or a black person doesn't run it, it's okay. Because the white people and the black people in America are the natural majority here, or had been for years. But they're trying to replace us. And they're using their power and their wealth and their money to get these positions where they can influence who is admitted to these colleges. And of course, a large number of fake Jewish people are put into every medical school and every law school, especially the ones that really count, like Harvard and Yale and Princeton. And the rest of us, who usually had those positions, because, and we should, because we're the majority. I mean, who should have the most positions, the minority or the majority? I'm going to ask you from a fairness point of view, who should have these positions? And I'll tell you right now, you know and I know that it should be the majority people in this country, the blacks and the whites. The whites are like 65% of the country. The blacks are like 20% of the country. We should have the majority of these positions. But in many cases, you see Jewish people with the majority. There was a story years ago about Harvard, the Harvard newspaper. And it seems that for years, the people that ran it and staffed it were all Jewish people. And the kids started to protest. So what did they do? The Jews resigned. But instead of putting white people in there, they put foreigners into the newspaper. You know, it's crazy. It's the craziest thing. They put mostly Arabs in there, as I recall. And it's called the Harvard Crimson, I think, was the name of the newspaper. You can look it up on Google, you know, a controversy over a number of Jews in the Harvard Crimson newspaper. And you'll see there that they didn't appoint white people. They appointed foreigners. You see, these fake Jews, who claim to be Jews, but they really aren't. They came from Khazaria, which were Mongolians, came across the continent and they parked there. And then they joined the Jewish religion to keep from having a war between the Christians and the Islamics overtake them. So they became Jewish by default, because their King John wanted them to. That was in about 740 A.D. And they've been giving Russia, especially, and Turkey trouble ever since, because they were right between Russia and Turkey. And they eventually took over Russia in the Communist Revolution in 1917 and turned that country into a Jewish killing field, wherein they killed and they slaughtered more than 65 million Christians. You know, thousands and thousands of people in every town, every city, from the Ukraine all the way to the other end of the continent. And vicious, you know, Trotsky. Trotsky, who had lived in New York for a while, went over there with $20 million to fund the Red Revolution, money he got from the Rothschild Bank, the Guarantee National Bank, run by Jacob Schiff, who had spent years undermining the Tsar of Russia. And finally, he was able to slaughter the Tsar and his innocent children. Now, how's that for murdering people? You not only murder the Tsar, but you murder his children, even. Well, I would call that about the lowest of the low. You know, usually when you assassinate somebody or kill them, you don't kill their children and their wife. But in this case, they did, didn't they? This is really sick. These people are as sick as it gets. Today, the Senate voted to end the ban on openly gay troops. And no longer will gay troops have to pretend that they're not gay. They'll be able to say, hey, I'm gay. What are you going to do about it? They'll be able to stand up in front of everybody else and say, I'm gay and I'm protected. And I think this is a good thing, because I think that there's a huge, huge number of gay troops. How? Why would there not be? I mean, here you have a group of men camping together, fighting with each other, wrestling with each other, going out together to bars, enjoying male company, muscular men who are impressed with their physique, who like to dress in a kind of military way, and also in t-shirts that are khaki, that are tight, so they can see their muscles. You know, these people have been gay for a long, long time. When I was in the, you know, close to the military and stationed around the world, there were gay guys everywhere. I mean, let's not be stupid here. I don't know what these Christians are talking about, because they're certainly naive if they think that there were no gays in the military. So at any rate, that's passed, and guess what? Another really good thing happened. The dream is over. The Senate blocked the bill for illegal immigrants to become citizens. Now, this is good news. I don't know how long that's going to last, because I expect the Republicans will probably overturn that and be traitor to the rest of us, because they would probably hope they could get a few Hispanic votes that way. That's what the Republicans did with the Civil Rights Bill. They were the ones that voted it through, thinking, well, we'll get black votes if we vote it through. Well, did they get any black votes? You could count them on one finger. Republicans are really retarded people. I mean, they really just don't get it. They just don't understand. Oh, by the way, our president, who was not born in the United States, but was born somewhere else, he claims he was born in Hawaii. He's leaving for Hawaii soon, but his family's left before him, because evidently they don't want to stay around him, because they consider him, maybe they consider him a loser, I don't know. By the way, we just had a winter solstice lunar eclipse, and it's overlapped for the first time in 456 years, and who cares? I mean, really? Do we really care that we have a lunar eclipse on the winter solstice? I mean, I thought we were over that sort of thing for a while. You know, let's get a new life, huh? Okay, at any rate, there are a lot of other stories that I could have highlighted today, but I wanted to highlight the ones that I presented to you, because I thought in their own way they were illustrative of what's going on in this country recently, of how our nation has been taken over by the bankers, who have changed the entire outlook of this country. The entire population has been filtered through a banking lens, so that the Christians, the Jews, the Wiccans, the Islamics, everybody who lived here before 1964-65, when the immigration, the Anti-White Immigration Act began, has been replaced by foreigners. Foreigners who don't think like us, who came here because, well, they could make more money here. And that's a banking idea. That's a Judaic Bolshevik idea, that a nation is just a place where you make money. I know, you're thinking, why, there's never been a banker who just wanted to make money. What are you, an anti-Semite, that you would think that that's all that bankers care about? I don't even have to answer that, because you think the same thing, that you never saw a banker that didn't like to sell loans for more than they were worth in order to put the money in his own selfish pocket. I mean, a banker would kill his mother for an extra $5 a week. You know it, and I know it. These are proverbial tricksters who will do anything to get an advantage over a population and to suck them dry of every dollar bill that they ever earned. And they're the type of people who would take Mr. Assange and use him to try to shut down the internet, because they can't own every site on the internet. They can own every newspaper in America. They can own every television station. But they can't shut down everybody on the internet. No, they can't. And that's what they want. They want to keep you quiet. They want to keep the blacks quiet. They want to keep the whites quiet, the Christians. And they even want to keep the Jews quiet. They don't want these Hasidic Jews running around talking about how they don't want Israel to exist because it's anti-biblical, that it's not supposed to exist until the Jews have their own Messiah, which they don't have yet. They don't want that getting out, that there's a whole bunch of Jewish people who are running around saying that. They want to control you and everything else. They want to control me. Well, I'm sick and tired of them, to tell you the truth. I don't like what's going on here, and I think we need to do something about it. Well, we'll be back again tomorrow for more news about the world today.